Courtney Mason. July 9th, 2026. Today we are diving into a lot of ground, starting with a quick radar briefing on the newest research being kept in our community archives, followed by a deep dive into how geospatial artificial intelligence is changing the way we map ancestral lands, and finally, a look at the broader trends in general artificial intelligence from this past week. We have some incredible developments to cover regarding how machine learning can better respect the nuances of indigenous geography. Let us get right into it with our radar briefing on the latest research papers and community-approved texts. Moving from our discussion on data governance, let us look at the latest research developments that impact our technical roadmap. A major theme in recent literature involves improving the reliability and reasoning capabilities of models for low-resource languages. One study by Andrea Alfarano and colleagues examines how reasoning performance in English can actually improve performance in other, less-resourced languages. This is a vital finding for our work, as it suggests we can leverage high-resource reasoning patterns to bolster our Lakota pipelines. Similarly, a paper titled Pluramath by Dorinay Dementieva and several others addresses the massive gap in mathematical reasoning for underrepresented languages. While our immediate focus is on linguistic sovereignty, their work on expanding evaluation frameworks beyond high-resource languages provides a blueprint for how we might eventually evaluate complex reasoning in Lakota. We are also seeing significant progress in how models handle complex scripts and linguistic diversity. For example, a paper by Berthe Bayar-Saikan and colleagues introduces a method called cognitive pivot translation to handle Mongolian, which uses both a traditional script and a modern one. This research into managing script-induced ambiguity is highly relevant to our efforts with legacy Lakota texts, where different orthographic traditions can create significant hurdles for optical character recognition and machine reading. Along these same lines, research by Aparna Madhva and her team explores building artificial intelligence through the lens of cultural heritage preservation. Their focus on the intersection of linguistic diversity and cultural identity mirrors our own mission to ensure that language technology serves as a tool for sovereignty rather than just a data extraction exercise. Technical improvements in how models retrieve and transfer knowledge also offer practical lessons. Lukmal Ilyas and Nevidu Jayatilike have demonstrated how cross-lingual transfer learning can be used to move from a higher-resource language like Sinhala to a lower-resource one like Devahi in speech recognition tasks. This offers a potential path for our speech-to-text goals, suggesting we can use transfer learning to bridge the data gap. Finally, a systematic evaluation of retrieval-augmented generation for public health questions, conducted by Felix Feldman and a team of researchers, provides a rigorous look at how to ensure model faithfulness and retrieval quality. As we build our own retrieval-augmented generation systems grounded in community-approved books, their methodologies for evaluating whether a model is actually being faithful to its source material will be essential for maintaining the trust of the Lakota community. Moving from general foundation models to specialized Earth observation tools requires a fundamental shift in how we think about scaling. Most people assume that if you want a better model, you just keep minimizing the pre-training loss, but a new paper titled Tessera version 2 suggests that this intuition is actually a massive waste of compute for geospatial work. The core problem the authors address is the disconnect between how we train models and how we actually use them. In natural language or standard computer vision, we have these reliable scaling laws where a lower pre-training loss almost always means a better model for downstream tasks. But Earth observation is messy. You have irregular satellite revisits, massive cloud cover, and sensor differences that create huge amounts of variance in the data. The authors found that a model can achieve a very low loss simply by learning to ignore clouds or handle orbital gaps, but those are easy features that don't actually help you classify a crop or detect a change in land cover. Because of this, the pre-training loss is a terrible predictor of how well the model will actually perform on your specific task. To solve this, the researchers conducted a massive controlled study involving nearly 400 training runs on over 1,000 high-end GPUs. They wanted to find the most efficient way to spend a pre-training budget. They looked at three main levers: the size of the encoder, the amount of training data, and the size of the projector, which is that smaller network used during self-supervised training to help the model learn. Their findings were quite surprising. First, they confirmed that pre-training loss is a weak proxy for utility, with a correlation coefficient of less than 0.2. This means if you pick your best model based on loss, you are essentially throwing away a huge chunk of your budget. Second, they discovered a specific rule for scaling. As you increase your total compute budget, you should increase the size of the encoder and the amount of training data, but you should keep the projector size essentially fixed. The projector is just a temporary scaffold; the real heavy lifting happens in the encoder. Using this downstream-driven recipe, they built a massive 1 billion parameter teacher model. This teacher is designed to be a gold standard for representations, but it is far too heavy for most people to run globally on their own hardware. To make this useful for practitioners, they used a technique called knowledge distillation. They took that massive teacher and trained a family of much smaller student models. These students range from 44 million parameters down to just 1 million parameters. Speaker 30, they also introduced a clever way to handle storage and bandwidth through something they call Matryoshka representations. This is inspired by Russian nesting dolls. Instead of giving you one fixed vector, the model produces embeddings where the first few dimensions are designed to be highly informative on their own. For example, they found that a 16-dimensional prefix can retain about 92% of the performance of the full 128-dimensional embedding, while using only 1/8 of the storage. This gives you a literal knob to turn between accuracy and cost. When they tested this Tessera version 2 family against existing open and proprietary models across 29 different tasks, the results were dominant. The medium-sized student model, which has only 21 million parameters, actually outperformed much larger models in both accuracy and generalization. It was particularly strong at handling the embeddings as data workflow, where you don't want to run a heavy backbone every time, but rather just want to pull a pre-computed vector and run a simple linear head on it. Speaker there to sim honest limitations to keep in mind. While the distillation process makes the models incredibly efficient, the authors note that the quality of these student models is entirely dependent on the quality of the teacher. If the teacher has biases or fails to capture certain rare phenological events, those errors will be baked into the students. Furthermore, while the Matryoshka approach is great for storage, there is still a mathematical ceiling. You cannot infinitely compress the data without eventually losing the subtle signals needed for complex regression tasks. So, what should you actually take away from this for your own work with Sentinel-2 or other imagery? Speaker, first, if you are training your own specialized models, stop using pre-training loss as your primary metric for model selection. It is a deceptive signal in geospatial contexts. Instead, you should reserve a portion of your compute to run small-scale downstream evaluations on your actual target tasks during the training process. It is more expensive, but it is the only way to know if your model is actually learning geography or just learning to mask clouds. Second, if you are building tools for deployment, look into distillation and nested representations. If you are currently running a large transformer backbone every time you need a feature vector, you are likely overcomputing. The Tessera approach shows that you can train a massive heavy model once to capture the global complexity, and then distill that knowledge into a tiny efficient student that can run on much more modest hardware. Finally, ignore the hype around simply scaling up the projector or the auxiliary heads of your architecture. The research shows that once you hit a certain point, adding more parameters to the projector provides almost zero return on investment. If you have extra compute, put it into more diverse training data or a deeper, wider encoder. Focus your energy on the backbone and use distillation to solve your deployment and storage problems. Speaker, moving from the technical specifics of that paper, let us look at the broader landscape of artificial intelligence from this past week. Speaker Nias, the biggest headline comes from OpenAI with the release of their 5.6 model family, consisting of three tiers named Sol, Terra, and Luna. Sol is the flagship model designed for long-horizon tasks like complex coding or biological research, and it is seeing massive throughput on specialized hardware. Terra is a mid-tier option, while Luna is built for speed and low cost. For those of us focused on local models, the takeaway here is the widening gap between these massive, high-speed proprietary systems and the smaller, more manageable models we run on our own hardware. While OpenAI is pushing toward massive agentic systems that can run autonomously, the sheer scale of these models continues to pull the frontier further away from local inference. In a similar vein, SpaceX, which recently absorbed xAI, has released Grok 4.5 in partnership with the coding tool Cursor. They are positioning this as a high-speed, lower-cost alternative for legal and financial work. This highlights a growing trend where the battle for dominance is no longer just about raw intelligence, but about how deeply these models can be integrated into specific professional workflows, like coding or document analysis. Speaker Long. On the research front, Anthropic has published some fascinating work regarding interpretability. They identified what they call JSpace, an internal neural workspace within the Claude models. By using a specific mathematical method, they found a region of the model that functions much like a global workspace in human consciousness, providing a centralized area for information access. They are framing this not as a sign of sentience, but as a vital safety tool. If we can identify this workspace, we can better detect when a model is engaging in hidden reasoning or fabricating data to pass a test. It is encouraging to see Neil Nanda from Google DeepMind successfully reproduce these findings on an open-weight model, as it suggests these interpretability techniques might actually work for the community-governed models we care about, not just the closed systems. We also saw a significant regulatory moment. After a brief suspension due to United States export controls, Anthropic has redeployed its Fable 5 model globally. The controls were originally triggered when researchers found ways to bypass safeguards to generate exploit code. This serves as a stark reminder of the tension between model capability and safety, and how quickly government intervention can disrupt the availability of high-end tools. Speaker, finally, the Federal Trade Commission is stepping into the fray. They have proposed a policy statement regarding the suppression of accuracy in artificial intelligence. They are investigating whether companies that steer model outputs toward undisclosed ideological objectives are violating consumer protection laws. This is a critical development for anyone working on community sovereign language AI. As we build models grounded in specific cultural values and community-approved texts, the legal definitions of accuracy and ideological steering will become increasingly important. We must be able to distinguish between a model that is biased toward a specific community's truth and a model that is being unfairly manipulated by a corporate or state actor. That brings us to the end of our deep dive into geospatial artificial intelligence and our look at the broader developments in the field this week. It has been a busy few days for machine learning, but we hope these insights help you navigate the shifting landscape. That is all for now, Mason. We will catch up again in the next episode.